Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start with baseball. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred had some help bungling the Houston Astros signal-stealing scandal. The all-powerful Players Union is equally to blame for the mess that has been mushrooming since November and is seemingly engulfing the sport as pitchers, catchers, and LeBron James report. That's right. The Astros scandal has ballooned to the point that Nike's ambassador to China deemed it safe to weigh in on the topic and scold Manfred. LeBron said via Twitter, "Listen, I know I don't play baseball, but I am in sports. And I know if someone cheated me out of winning the title and I found out about it, I would be effing irate. I mean, like, uncontrollable about what would and could I do. Listen here, baseball commissioner. Listen to your players. Speaking today about how disgusted, mad, hurt, broken, et cetera, about this, literally, baseball, the baseball is in your court, or should I say field, and you need to fix this for the sake of sports. Hashtag, just my thoughts coming from a sports junkie, regardless my own sport I play." All right, Manfred certainly deserves blame for the mishandling of this scandal. Despite his public apology yesterday, Manfred may never live down referring to the commissioner's trophy, the game's most prized possession, as a piece of metal. But the singular focus on Manfred provides cover for the players' union. It was the players' union that insisted on immunity for its players before allowing them to cooperate with the league during its investigation of the Astros. The union set the tone for the repercussions, what they would be for the players. Manfred's original mistake was listening to the players, or at least listening to their union. You want to understand why cheating is baked into the culture of baseball? Because the game's players have too much power. They're impossible to discipline. So now we're headed toward a scenario where the players will take justice into their own hands. Astros manager Dusty Baker has expressed concern that opposing pitchers will seek retribution by throwing at his batter. It's a valid concern. Many players believe the Astros are the O.J. Simpson of the sport, getting away with a double steal. Back in November, when this whole thing started, when the union cut the immunity deal, I believe Manfred and the union saw the signal-stealing scandal as a victimless crime. Manfred's approach to the discipline focused solely on deterring future crimes and failed to incorporate satisfying the victims. It's not just the Dodgers, who lost to the Astros in the 2017 World Series, who feel like victims. Pete Rose, he feels like a victim. He's still serving a lifetime ban for gambling. Mike Trout, he feels like a victim. He ripped the Astros and called for stiffer penalties for the players. LeBron James and many other sports fans feel like victims. Can we trust the game? You can't let the 2017 Houston Astros walk around calling themselves world champions. That's not fair to the other players. Manfred has no choice but to strip Houston of its title. All right, Marcellus, Rick. Should MLB strip the Astros of the 2017 World Series title?
Yes, they should. Absolutely. And I want everybody to ride down this slippery slope with me, because I'm going to admit that looking at baseball in the lens of cheating and cheating scandals would revise all of baseball's history, it seems like, because it's such a mountainous effort. But this is fascinating and disheartening in the same time. I say it's disheartening because the players are sitting there saying, wow, a championship, integrity, those are validations and level playing fields for greatness. Every player goes out there and wants to make sure that they can show their maximal ability based on the belief that this is a level playing field and may the best man, best team win. And what's disheartening is this was told to the players that integrity, is secondary. If you don't strip them of this title, you're basically making that statement become a historic mandate that you must go out there and not only fight the natural forces, but the unforeseen circumstances of potentially someone's cheating and still succeeding. But what's really fascinating is how they told the players also, if you really read the tea leaves, that this is all about money. Oh, you thought it was about greatness and integrity. No, playoffs are just revenue extensions. Hmm. And the ultimate revenue extension is a championship. That's the revenue extender. It's a piece of metal you're playing for. We're playing for something else in terms of money. And I think because of the implosions internally, the players are irate. And the explosions and criticism by people like us means they have to vacate this title.
Not a chance. No way do you take this title away from them. Because otherwise, you need to go back and you need to take titles away from...
No, you don't.
You do. Jose Canseco.
No, you don't.
Mark McGwire, the Bash Brothers in 1989. Roger Clemens has 2 World Series titles. Barry Bonds has countless home run titles. Where do you stop?
Where do you stop?
There might not be crying in baseball, but there has been cheating in it forever. So if you're going to draw a line in the sand and say, oh, Astros... You can't cheat. We're taking away your title. Then you got to go back and you got to do that to everybody in baseball who has done something where we know they've broken the rules and they ended up succeeding,
Rick,
because of it.
We are seeing unprecedented internal criticism from their current players, star players, right. Mike Trout, across the board. Again, a lot of people are laughing at LeBron James for weighing in. But LeBron James is just a sports fan who feels like, well, hold on, man. I felt robbed. That wasn't the case during the Barry Bonds steroid scandal in terms of it being this pervasive. A lot of the baseball players during that time felt like, hey, this is unfair, but they understood it was a part of the culture. Clearly here, these guys, from Mike Trout to a lot of players across the board, feel like a line has been crossed. When you lose the credibility and the respect from your players, when your own players don't respect the game and you lose their action, has to be taken. You don't have to go retroactively back to every crime that's ever been committed in baseball, but clearly this here is a bridge too far. And when Dusty Baker's sitting out there going, well, hold on, man, they're going to start taking retribution against my players, that's a dangerous deal that you're people vigilante justice among their own players.
So do you think that if they take the title away, that they're still not going to throw at the Houston Astros players? That there were less players.
Likely.
Okay, but the reality is this is where it's gone sideways with the unwritten rules in baseball. This is why the whole throwing at guys and retaliation and all that, it used to be that it was handed down. There was understanding of what the unwritten rules were.
Yeah.
Now, everybody's got their own interpretation of that. And I don't really, look, there were just as many players who complained and took issue with the guys who used steroids and said, that's unfair. I lost my spot because either I gave up home runs to these guys or because there were guys that were using steroids. And even before that, PEDs. I mean, when I started my career, I was covering baseball. They used to have candy dishes out there with methamphetamines in it.
And that's the problem with baseball right now. They're being forced to look at this issue differently because they've been half pregnant in terms of cheating in the past. Selective, if you want to say. Certain players, we're going to have a greater magnitude and we're going to ostracize Pete Rose, but then we'll look at some other guys who have PEDs and other issues. We'll look at them differently. Maybe you can get in the Hall of Fame, maybe you can't. Can we go back into the annals in a race? We can't. And right now, baseball's they're stuck in the middle. They're riding the fence of, we don't want to revise history, but at the same time, we can't have this promoted as our future. Lack of integrity.
But you know what? They could have, look, the league could have taken care of this. They knew it was going on, and they looked the other way.
Yeah.
Just like the questions about PED, they looked the other way. Baseball has always, there might not be crying in baseball, but cheating has always
There's
been
some
there.
Lying
and
going.
If you're not, and if you're not cheating, you're not trying. That's been the motto.
Rick, I hear what you're saying, but unless there's some retribution here, these players can't just get completely away with it. This immunity deal stinks to high heaven.
I agree.
And again, you can't walk that back, so the only thing you can walk back is the title. Take the title away. That's the only punishment you can give these Houston Astro players.
Having your peers look at you and say, you're not a champion. And knowing that they look at you that way is penalty enough, because you're walking around, you can't carry that World Series champion, because the guys that you compete with, the guys that you play with going forward, look at you and say, nah, that ain't legit.
Yeah.
That to me would be enough damage that people don't respect what I accomplished.
Look, it really turns into a piece of metal when you walk around and you go to your peers and you have on your ring and they're like, it's meaningless.
Yeah.
That said, I still think it falls short. I think even taking away the title, because there's no one to give it to. Think about that. You don't give that to the Dodgers. Oh, no, I'm not accepting that.
No,
you don't force me gold medals. You didn't win? I got second, but here you go. Give me the silver back. Here you go. You wear the gold. I'm not that guy. I'm not wearing that as a team. Where would your pride be in getting something that you didn't earn, even if it was a...
If I got cheated, I'll take that title.
And do you guys,
I don't have to wear it proudly, but I'll take it.
Do you guys really think that this sign
stealing? You're not wearing it, so you just
have to wear it proudly, but I'll take it.
They took sign stealing to the next level. Do you think sign stealing hasn't been happening in baseball over these years?
Ever.
That there hasn't been other ways where guys are using videotape and a variety of things in order to get over? Come on. They simply got caught, and we're in a social media age where we get to hear everybody crying loud and long about the fact that
I was
rooked.
That's a good point. But since we are in this era and we do get to hear everybody complain, and if I'm baseball, I don't want this. The Houston Astros brand is damaged. I guarantee you, Little League coaches around, we're not the Houston Astros. and I'm being serious about that. Their brand is damaged. And I'm just sorry, if there's not some sort of punishment, again, you don't punish just to deter. You got to satisfy the victims. Mm. And you have Pete Rose in this building signing autographs where we're doing this show from right now, banned for life over gambling. The man has a right to feel like, well, damn, why am I treated this way? These guys cut some immunity deal and really violated the integrity of baseball and have everybody up in arms and nothing happens to them. I'm sorry. At some point, you have to satisfy the victims and, you know.
But the retribution is no substitution for what occurred and your mentality. I don't know why, as an L.A. native, USC comes to mind and Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart. And you go, now you show up on campus, you don't see them there. Where's your mind go? It doesn't go to the reality that they try to create, and it's a false reality. So I don't think that even the perception of them coming out and vacating the title is going to change what the reality is. We know what happened.
Muscle pain? I'm talking stopping your tracks. I'll never work out again. Oh my God, what am I going to do kind of pain? This is the kind of pain Dr. Jason Wersland was in when he created Theragun, the deep muscle massager that's unlike anything you've ever felt. Theragun isn't a cheap massager that just tickles your muscles. Our handheld percussive device uses a scientifically calibrated combination of speed, depth, and power to release the deepest muscle tension. It's this simple. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just everyday life, you can use Theragun. Theragun is the preferred muscle recovery device for over 250 professional sports teams and is used by hundreds of thousands of satisfied customers around the world to reduce pain, increase range of motion, and soothe aching muscles. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to theragun.com/cadence. For a limited time, listeners who speak for yourself get a free charging stand with the purchase, a $79 value. That's theragun.com/cadence. theragun.com/cadence. CADENCE.
We're joined by the lineal heavyweight champion, Tyson Fury, who faces Deontay Wilder this Saturday for the heavyweight championship of the world. Only on pay-per-view or via the Fox Sports app.
Oh, man, we are honored to have you here.
Say it, brother.
This is the biggest heavyweight fight since...
Dun, dun, dun! It's the biggest heavyweight fight since I can remember, put it that way. A long, long time. Bob Arum was quoted saying it's the biggest since Frazier Ali won. Other people Whoa. Have said since Lennox Lewis, Holyfield. Other people have said since Lewis, Mike Tyson. Either or, they're all a long time ago. This is the biggest heavyweight fight in recent history, that's for sure.
Wow, and since it's a big fight, it's a rematch, you got some changes in your game plan. You changed trainers. You say you're going to weigh 270. Years ago, I used to weigh 270. You don't look 270.
Well, do I look 370?
No, you look less than that.
Cheers,
but,
man.
But a lot of people think you won the first fight, but you have these changes. Why the changes?
You know, because I got a draw last time. It wasn't a win. And a draw to me is as good as a loss. So we're going for the W this time. I'll bring in some serious knockout trainers, and we're going to look for the knockout, Kronk style.
Now, why the knockout?
Detroit, baby, what's up?
Okay, I heard you. I think Detroit felt that. The second round prediction of a knockout that in the fight that you went down a couple times, and it was a draw. Why are you making this bold prediction?
Because last time I had 3 years out the ring. I had two easy sparring contests, and then I fought Deontay Wilder after being active for 6 months. I couldn't have been at my best. I had to lose 147 pounds before that fight and then jump in there with one of the guys who's been made 8 defences of his title. And that Deontay Wilder, in my opinion, was one of the probably the best one I've ever seen him. And he still couldn't beat the Gypsy King on my worst night. So over a year later, he ain't got no chance. I'm going to slap him around the ring, no problem.
It's fascinating, though. I mean, Marcellus and I watched that fight together. I believe it was your birthday. And most people believe, like, if not for the knockdowns, you won the fight. So it feels like if you just stay on your feet and stick with the same game plan, you would win.
Yeah, but, you know, thinking, I thought I won the fight, but thinking just ain't good enough. You know, I'm here to win. I'm here to put on a great show. You know, I've got thousands and thousands of fans traveling overseas to see a great fight. This is being dubbed as the biggest fight in the last 20 years. So I want to put on a great show here in Las Vegas. I want to give my fans something to cheer for, and I want to go home victorious. But before that, I want to go out with all my fans in Las Vegas and get absolutely fucking smashed.
Jorge!
When I hear you talk about a knockout and carrying extra weight, it sounds to me like also, I don't want it to be in the judge's hands. I want to decide this fight.
You know, me and Deontay Wilder, we both hold our own destinies right here in both hands. It's up to us to deliver. You know, the judges are going to be fair. The referee's going to be fair. I've got no complaints at all. The Las Vegas State Commission are going to do a fantastic job at being the officials for this fight, and I've got no doubts that Top Rank or the commission are going to do a fantastic job. But on the night, it's down to me and Wilder, the only two men that count, really.
Yeah, and look, let's be real. If you were to go into Wilder's camp and they hear that, oh, he wants to be heavier, and he wants it to end early, maybe these punches are really hurting. He needs to get out of there quick. Or what do you say to that criticism?
You know, there's no criticism. They can take what they want from me coming in heavy, me looking for a knockout. The one thing I will say, though, is every time I've always looked for a knockout, I've got one. Mm. Every time I've took a fighter into a dogfight, I've always won. I've never lost it toe-to-toe with anybody. The only time I've ever been caught is when I've been boxing. So, you know, I don't want to get caught in this one. I don't want to be getting knocked down. I want to drag him into a dogfight from round one, and we'll see who's got the biggest cojones on the night. That's for sure.
You know, in the first fight, there was a bit of a racial element to the pre-fight coming up. And boxing has a long tradition of...
I'm not so sure about that, though. You know, I'm not so sure there was no racism in the fight. I didn't see any.
No. Not racism, but, like, there was a racial element to the pre-hype, hyping the fight. They used Great White Hope versus black fighters, a traditional storyline.
Yeah, but we're all human beings. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, pink, or green. We share the same blood. We are humans. This fight isn't a racial war between blacks and whites. This is a fight between the two most high-performance heavyweight on the planet, going toe-to-toe. There's nothing racial about this fight. I've got nothing against Deontay Wilder as a man, and he has nothing against me as a man. But as two fighters, we really want to give it each other. And on Saturday night, we're going to see it!
I hear that answer as the fight sells itself. It doesn't need any extra. You got two great fighters who both are looking for knockouts. You don't need any extra.
No, we're both undefeated heavyweights in 12-year careers. We both turned pro in 2008. The late, great Emmanuel Stewart predicted both of us would be heavyweight champions of the world. Our paths have crossed before. We've got a draw. We've got to do it again. And I'm really looking forward to it. This is what I was built for, the big fights in Las Vegas. This is my third fight here, back-to-back in Las Vegas. Deontay Wilder fought here last time in Las Vegas. We're putting it all on the line for the fans. You know, me and Deontay, we have a lot to lose. We have all our reputation, everything we've built up over the years, all goes on the line on Saturday night. But the real winners in this are the fans across the world, because they get to see, for the first time in a long time, the two best in the divisions fighting each other. Even though we're from rival promotion companies and rival TV networks, we're setting a precedent here to say, look, when the best want to fight each other, doesn't matter which TV you're with, which promoter you're with, it can happen. And hopefully this year will be the battles of, in all weights, the best versus the best. No slacking, no hiding. Whoever's the best in the division, come out and fight each other, because the heavyweights are back. We're ruling the division. We're on top. Glory days are here again.
All right. I love all that. I want to get into your emotional build-up to the fight. It's Wednesday right now. You say no hiding. But, dude, you're walking around with a hat, a hoodie, sunglasses on, 6'7", the champ. We know who you are, but there is an emotional play and buildup for the fight. Where are you right now on a Wednesday?
You know, I'm cool, calm, collected, tall, dark, and handsome, super sexy. I think we've all heard that before. You know, I'm cold as ice, honestly. I'm cool. Do you know, it's a fight to me. I've been boxing my whole life. Boxing and fighting my whole life. And before I was coming back for this, I battled the hardest demons that anyone could ever battle. Anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder. Right. And you know what? I'm still here telling the story. I'm still here fighting. So what can defeat me? Why should I be nervous over a boxing fight?
You should be so excited. And I want to use your perspective to give us an understanding. You've been boxing your entire life.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is the biggest fight in terms of promotion and sales, but what does it feel like to you in terms of distance or how great this is, the spectacle this week compared to fights of old?
You know, I boxed in some big fights. I went to Germany, Dusseldorf, to fight Klitschko, who was considered the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world with 26 title defenses in his own country. That was pretty big. 50-odd thousand people at a massive football stadium. I boxed in some really big cards in the UK. I boxed Wilder at the Staples Center. But, you know, this has a special feeling to it. Mm. This is the monster fight of the decade. This is the fight everybody's been waiting to see for over a year now. And you're getting both fighters in the prime. I don't think nothing can compete with this at the moment. This is the biggest fight in contact sports right now. Not just boxing, any sport, anything. This is the biggest thing that's going on right now. Mm. And I can't see anything being bigger. You know, we're the two biggest fighters on the planet, including any contact sport, and we're both getting it on, so what's not to like?
You say that with such pride, but then the journalist in me says, what if McGregor and Mayweather...
No!
Oh, no, too much?
No.
Too much?
Too much? Okay.
Too much.
So no respect for that.
Back off.
No
respect. Knocking nobody down.
No respect for that. Okay.
Hey, I want to ask you this. We had Deontay Wilder on the show from the Super Bowl, and it sounds like you two have a mutual respect and kind of halfway like each other. That seems unusual.
Do you know what? There ain't no respect. Honestly, I think Deontay Wilder's a pussy, and I don't mind saying it.
Okay.
And, you know, I reckon if I started a chant now, this place would go absolutely nuts. Do you want to hear what Wilder is? Oh, Wilder is a pussy. Wilder is a pussy. La 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 la. La 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 la. Wilder is a pussy.
Interview. Right. Uncle Jimmy,
sure,
I don't know if you've ever met Uncle Jimmy, but he's got a couple of questions for you before we let you go.
Are you
Jimmy.
Just gonna make me fall in behind that? You want me to calm that down?
Yeah.
Come
yeah.
on, Uncle look, Jimmy, man, let's see what listen, you got.
Look, I just got a question about your training.
Go on, what
now,
is
I
it?
Respect everything about you, but did I read somewhere that part of your training regimen is you masturbate 7 times a day?
What is going on?
I can only able to do that because I'm using Easy Stroke by Gypsy King.
So I guess it's safe to say...
the finest in the nation.
So I guess it's safe to say that you a beater and not a cheater, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Ah, all right,
yourself. show now is ESPN boxing analyst and friend of the show, Max Kellerman.
My dog.
Max, before we get to you, I want to apologize to any viewers with virgin ears. Tyson Fury went a little bit too far. He asked for us to apologize. We apologize.
There it is.
All right. Max Kellerman's here.
My dog.
I got a round of applause.
Jason, I got to say something about Tyson Fury saying that. First of all, you have to fight Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder with the right hand. That's the hardest punch in the history of boxing. I'm not saying why. Like,
whoa.
Yep. Mike Tyson had the hook, the uppercut,
Ernie
the
Shavers.
Right hand. Ernie Shavers with the right hand was devastating. That's the competition. But if someone said, gun to my head, hardest single shot in the history of boxing.
George Foreman.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So Foreman had more thudding power. But in terms of electric, one shot and you're gone. Not both hands, not any shot. The right hand from Deontay Wilder would be my pick as number one. That dude got dropped 2 times in the last 4 rounds he fought him. Wilder's coming for you, and you call him that before the fight? These two dudes are not scared. They're not scared. The reason this is such a big deal is not only what they've done in the ring in terms of the way they've dominated opponents, but what they have on the inside. Both these guys are special fighters on the inside and are not scared.
Now, the one-hitter quitter, obviously, of Wilder versus the boxing prowess of Fury, we saw that play out in the first fight. Now, all of a sudden, Fury has a different game plan. He's trying to adopt the Wilder game plan. How do you see that working
out? Not exactly the Wilder game plan. What Fury learned against Valeen, he got a bad cut early in the fight. It's really kind of brilliant. He moved the fight to the inside. Why is that brilliant? If I'm down an eye, let me even it up. Let's make sure we both have no eyes. Because on the inside, it's much more about feel than vision, right? And once he did that, he leveled the playing field. He's a more polished inside fighter. Deontay Wilder, to your point about Shavers, what makes Deontay so different is Shavers had that kind of power. But to me, Shavers never saw himself as a champion. He was happy to be there, hoping he could land a lucky shot or a big shot. Deontay has a self-view of champion. He believes he is great, and that makes the power even more dangerous. But he needs space. He's 6'7", 217. That's a string bean. It's all levers and leverage. He needs space to hurt you. Tyson Fury, by moving it on the inside, if he really does, and he's not just playing head games, is negating that space. Now Deontay's got to figure out a way to get punching room, and Tyson is a more polished inside fighter, even though he's taller.
How confident are you that we're going to see a special fight on Saturday?
I'm confident. Because in the end, Deontay always gets his guy. He figures out a way. Whatever people want us to talk about his boxing skills. He's not classically polished. Here's the flaw in his game. But he has figured out a way to land the home run punch every time. The only reason Tyson Fury doesn't have a loss is because somehow this dude got up. I mean, but that's so unusual. He started getting called the Undertaker because whoever gets up from a Deontay Wilder right hand. So the elements are there. Both guys view themselves as great. They both view this as an historical matchup. The first fight was terrific. The rematch, they both think they need to make adjustments in order to win. Both think they need to take more risks in order to win. On paper, it shapes up to be a great fight.
Outside of Wilder having that one-hitter quitter, what is his greatest attribute in the ring?
What I mentioned, it's the self-belief. It's the, like, the first time Deontay Wilder was built against stiffs. By the way, here's a guy who reminds me of him a little bit, who's physically very different. He was a short fighter and from a different neck of the woods, Rocky Marciano, who was this enormous knockout puncher but was fed stiffs on his way up. But little by little, eventually they started increasing the competition. And Rocky knew, just figured out a way to land that shot. The first time Deontay was in with a live body was Bermaine Stiverne. First live body he was ever in with. And hey, careful, Deontay, you've never been 12 rounds. Don't get overexcited, he can lure you into a trap. Deontay fought a disciplined fight behind the jab, won on points, all 12 rounds. He dominated the fight, but disciplined. And that discipline comes from that self-view as a great fighter. Mm.
Max, you're a boxing historian. You know the game as well as anybody working it today. We've seen boxing's history play up the white-black angle. We saw it a little bit in the first fight between these two guys. It's not there at all, this fight. Doesn't need it, or it just doesn't sell as well as it used to. Why is it not being played into in this fight?
That's a great question, Jason, and I'll leave it to you to bring that up because no one else really has that I've seen. And you have the guts to do it, but I've thought about that. Is it, if you want to take the cynical view, it's that it's not going to help you sell it any more than you're already selling it, right? The fight is selling itself at this point because not only do you have these enormous promotional vehicles behind them, ESPN and Fox and everything, but also the first fight was great, and it's for the heavyweight championship of the world between two undefeated fighters. Do you really need that element? Would it bring anything? The kind of more hopeful view is that in certain respects, as much progress as we've seemed to have lost in recent years, in certain respects, maybe we're entering a more post-racial kind of phase, at least as it goes with boxing promotions. The interesting thing about this fight is it reminded me a little bit of Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney.
Yeah.
Once again, I have Deontay as the white guy, right? Rocky Marciano, Jerry Cooney. Jerry Cooney was relatively inexperienced, huge puncher, and Larry Holmes was the more experienced, excellent boxer. And in the end, Larry Holmes outclassed him. But if the same thing was happening in this fight with Deontay and Fury the first time, Fury was clearly outboxing him. Deontay was looking to land the big punch. Holmes and Cooney was sold almost exclusively on the racial angle.
Yeah.
And maybe in one way, that's a sign of progress that you fast forward, what is it, about 40 years now, and a similar kind of fight doesn't need the kind of trumped up racial, so to speak, racial component. Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney never wanted to make it about race. Neither one of those guys liked the fact that it was about race. And these two guys are in position now where they're like, no, we don't have to do that if we don't want.
Now let's keep looking through the historical lens. And I want you to answer these two questions. If Tyson Fury wins, he is blank in history. And if Wilder wins, he's blank in history.
It's so difficult to place them because both have proven greatness. No one wanted to fight King Kong Ortiz, Luis Ortiz.
Mm-hmm.
Deontay Wilder fought King Kong Ortiz when he didn't have to. King Kong Ortiz was undefeated almost all by knockout. 6'4" southpaw. For anyone who doesn't know, you don't want to have to fight a southpaw. Does everything backwards if you don't have to. Deep Cuban amateur background from La Finca, the farm in Cuba, where they take you from the cradle, basically, and you live there and learn how to box. With punching power? No one wants to fight that dude. Deontay fought him twice.
Twice, right.
Knocked him out twice. Tyson Fury. A lot of people try to beat Vladimir Klitschko for 10 years. No one could do it till Tyson Fury came around. And then those two guys fought each other. Tyson Fury had the nerve to get in with Deontay off a layoff, having fought no one really, and then got in with Tyson and then put on that kind of performance. So while they both have done great things, their resumes are thin. They don't have deep resumes. Like if you look at Muhammad Ali, Joe Louis, the greatest heavyweights ever, they had deep, Evander Holyfield, deep resumes of many fights against top fighters. These guys don't have that. What they do have is tremendous performances against the few top fighters they fought. But the top fighters they fought are the type of dudes you do not want to fight if you don't have to.
Look, a rising tide lifts all boats. These two heavyweights putting on this performance, hopefully on Saturday, can it lift boxing back up a level in relevance?
Boxing has been increasingly marginalized over time in American life. And that has to do with the fact that it's violent, the fact that it's disorganized compared to other sports. By the way, the same thing might happen to football. Like, I don't anticipate football will be the as main, because boxing was once mainstream.
Stop
like
it,
football
Max.
Is
yeah.
now.
Stop it, Max. Stop it, Max.
Jason, if you went back to the 1940s and told someone boxing would be marginalized, no one
would
believe
agree.
You.
I would agree
okay.
with that. Yep.
So boxing has been, over the last many decades, 3, 4, 5 decades now, dependent upon singular stars, as you say, you know, the rising tide lift all boats, lifting everyone up. But what I think we're entering into is a new phase of boxing where promotional companies tied into major distribution outlets can mainstream the sport better than any individual star. The UFC has mainstreamed, not because of any single star, because we've seen them come and go. You know, their shelf lives are short because it's a very, you know, any top 10 fighter could beat the best fighter in the UFC and frequently does. So it's much more like the NFL, the UFC, than let's say the NBA. It's more about the brand, the shield, than any one fighter, including Conor McGregor, including whoever you want, Tito Ortiz once upon a time, or whoever you want to say. I think boxing is entering that era where it's much more about the systemic stuff that helps the sport than it is about any one cat. Of course, a big star helps you, but it's more about the fact that it's everywhere you look now.
To that point, the tide higher if Fury wins or if Wilder wins?
In this country, if Deontay wins, because he's American, you know, like that, in America, whatever you want to say, and by the way, Fury's not, is English speaking as his native language, right? Like it's
yeah, rare,
Lennox
rare.
Lewis, people used to bemoan the fact that he was from England. And then Klitschko came along and you said, well, at least he spoke English as his native language. In America, he had an easy name to pronounce, not a lot of consonants and, you know, in. So Tyson Fury has that going for him, but that's not the same thing as being an American champion, particularly when you can punch like Deontay Wilder. That said, Fury is an enormous personality and a truly great boxer.
USA! USA!
So worldwide, the answer might be Fury. In this country, probably Deontay.
I think either one of them can elevate the sport because I think they're both fascinating. I think Deontay, because of the power, and like he's like a basketball player that has George Foreman or Ernie Shavers type power. But man, Tyson Fury's story is so fascinating, all that he's overcome. That's what I don't think we've had a heavyweight since Tyson that people find fascinating.
If you see, Andre Ward did a great sports science piece that'll run on our air on ESPN. That shows you Tyson Fury's vision and the way how elusive he is and why scientifically, like they break down how he's able to avoid punches. Part of it's the angle because your field of vision on the lower half. He is a special defensive fighter. And as I said, like the Undertaker, he rose from the dead against. So it's not just that he has a big personality and an interesting story outside the ring. He walks the walk, but so does Deontay. Deontay is 217. 217-pound dudes don't chase around 250-pound dudes.
Ever.
Unless they're Jack Dempsey, Mike Tyson, or Evander Holyfield, like, or Pacquiao when he moved up in weight, but then he still weighed the same as the other dude. Only very special fighters on the inside do that. Deontay is one of them.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to throw this out there between you two, and then I'm going to step away and just let y'all fight. Your boy yesterday on this show said Floyd Mayweather, better athlete of the decade than LeBron James.
Oh, yeah. Not even first.
Go ahead. Take
it. You shaking your head in agreement?
Before I even answer that question, I did radio for 6 years with this fool. Listen to this one. What would you rather have in your house? Ants or cockroaches?
Oh, you ain't gonna go there.
What would you rather have? Ants. Get Marcellus, answer the question.
Hell no, I'd rather have roaches. What? Hey, one, they're scared of you when you come in the room. Two, they only come out at night. And three, it's only like eight of them. You get ants, the whole house coming down.
Eight roaches.
Thank you. Did I win some people over with that one? Thank
eight
you.
Roaches? Where are you? There are only eight roaches.
Oh, we had them jumbos, though. We had the big boys.
I mean, this is who I'm going to argue with a dude who'd rather have roaches than ants right now.
And I'm about to argue with a dude who's wanted to turn an athletic award into a community service award. Because if we're talking about strictly in your sport as an athlete, undefeated, never lost.
Yeah.
We're talking about 10 fights in a decade, 8 title defenses. That's basically, I won the NBA Finals 8 times, never losing in the biggest moments. And you talk about his individual success. He's made the most money. He's never been touched. When he is touched, it's a highlight for someone's career. It's Floyd Mayweather. Hands
when
down.
Floyd Mayweather said, let me correct you on this. When Floyd Mayweather said,
Wiley.
When Floyd Mayweather said he's TBE, the best ever, he was quick to say, I'm not talking about who's the best just in the ring. Someone else can have that. I'm talking about the fight game, the boxing game, who played it the best. Like if it was a video game, what's the objective?
Yeah.
Make the most money, create a great legacy, get out with your marbles, right? That's what he's talking about. He's right. He's the best ever at winning the boxing game, the fight game. He's not the greatest fighter of all time.
No.
Like, the reason he's the best ever at that is not only was he a super great, one of the greatest of all time, one of the two or three great pure boxers ever, but he knew what to do, how to market himself, how to create the path of least resistance to fight the right guy at the right time in his career, Canelo when he was still a baby.
Don't do that.
It's true.
Oh, that's cold. When Floyd was coming up fighting older fighters, they were like, oh, the guy's over the hill. Then when Floyd is the old guy in the same segment, guess what they say?
No,
Floyd he has
credit.
Too much experience.
Floyd got credit when he was a junior lightweight for fighting Gennaro Hernandez, Angel Manfredi, all those dudes. When he moved up to lightweight, once he left lightweight, he was like, let me just be careful who I pick and choose. Now, that doesn't mean those dudes would have beaten him.
Hey.
My money still would have been on Floyd, but that's a long way from saying he does it. Like, everyone thought the 73 win Golden State Warriors were just going to baptize the Cavs.
Right.
But then you actually have to play the game, and that's the difference. LeBron couldn't pick and choose who he played. He had to play when the dust settled, who's in the winner's circle. He had to play the dude in the winner's bracket every single time.
And he picked who he came to the winner's bracket with. He picked his teams. Yep. He went out there and said, I'm going to land here, play there. Floyd said, I'm fighting
LeBron
you.
LeBron stacked the deck. But so did others. And whether or not he stacked the deck, we're not comparing LeBron James to MJ, then he loses that. We're comparing him to Floyd, who did not fight the entire decade, who fought Miguel Cotto right around the time. I think Miguel Cotto in his next fight lost to Austin Trout, who's a good fighter. Not a Hall of Famer, but a good fighter. By the way, Canelo, right around that time, barely beat Austin Trout. Fight could have gone either way. Canelo and Cotto at the time Floyd fought them were very good. They weren't great.
Stop
he was careful.
Talking about ED isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. ED used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/speak to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/speak for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/speak.
All right, welcome back. Rick Buford's back with us. Let's talk some hoops. What you got, homeboy?
Yes, sir. Let's move to Marcellus Clippers. They add another piece to the roster. Point guard Reggie Jackson agreeing to a buyout with the Pistons and plan to join LA's second favorite team. Mm. Jackson could have signed anywhere, but chose to team up with Kawhi, Paul George, and the Clippers team with his eye on a title run. Wanted to ask you guys, do you think this is proof players believe the Clippers are winning the title this year? Mm. Come on, big dog.
You already know what I'm going to say. What DJ Khaled say? Another one. Look, we keep getting these players. The depth that we have, the racks on racks on racks that we're going to throw out in the playoffs on every team we play, including the Lakers if they want some, is going to be insurmountable. Look, here's the thing. We know this is true. Players talk on a different channel than the media. Mm. The players are saying, and they're talking through their actions, we know where the chip's going. We know what the favorites look like, and that's the Clippers. Then also the team composition. Let's be respectful of the Lakers, but LeBron – and then AD, players are like, is there room to breathe or even room to ball? We saw what happened with Kuzma this year. We saw what happened before with Bosh of yesteryear. Players are factoring that into the equation on and off the court. Last but not least, what gets lost in a lot of this recruiting is the fact that it's not so much player to player, it's representation to representation. You go upstairs and have a meeting with Mr. Ballmer and Jerry West. And didn't have that same meeting with Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss. Case dismissed. Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah, it's not only proof that the Clippers are the team that the NBA players think is going to win the title, but it's also the belief that if they win a title, they're going to get credit for winning that title. Huh? As you noted, with the Lakers, and I've had any number of players say this, LeBron sucks all the oxygen out of the room. It's not that they don't like him. It's just if you lose, it's your fault.
Yeah.
If you win, it's to LeBron's credit. And at this point, Reggie looks at this team with Pat Bev as the Beverly as the starting point guard and says, not only am I going to get some shine and be able to play and contribute to this, I might even get some crunch time numbers. Because the reality is the Lakers could use a player like Reggie Jackson. They desperately need a player, another player who can go get his own shot and is fully willing to take that shot with the game on the line. That's Reggie. But the fact that he's taking the Clippers is because he thinks they're – players don't look at the stats. They don't look at the standings. They don't look at analytics. They look at, oh, man, I don't want to play against that guy. I don't want to play against those guys.
Yeah, that's
I want to run with these guys.
That's the squad.
I'm a little surprised here, and I don't want to be too critical of the Lakers because I don't know if they pursued Reggie Jackson. Maybe they did. How hard they went after him, I don't know. But I am a little surprised at their inability, coming off the Kobe tragedy and that narrative of the Lakers. Right now they're the favorites to win the title. I would want to be a part of that narrative of winning the title with the Lakers, honoring Kobe Bryant's legacy. I'm a little surprised that if Reggie Jackson had the opportunity to go to the Lakers and he chose the Clippers over them, that's because, one, I don't think he's going to get very many minutes. I really don't. I'm a little surprised here.
Well, offensively, you got to respect Reggie Jackson as being a compliment to Pat Beverly. So I see him getting his opportunity, especially with the injuries Pat Beverly's had this year. But I think the greater conversation is the lack of ability to close in recruiting for the Lakers, and it's been a problem of late. We can't even count LeBron, because LeBron's like, I ain't even come for the Lakers. I didn't come for basketball reasons. I came for reasons outside. Oh, you happen to be the Lakers in Los Angeles. We saw Kawhi. We saw PG. You see it now with Marcus Morris, and now you're looking at Reggie Jackson. It's just a long list of guys who choose Clippers over Lakers.
And you make a fair point, because the Lakers' chemistry right now is as good as I've seen of any team in the league right now. And so their urgency to go get a guy like Reggie, who is a little bit of a live wire, how that would play in that locker room. Everybody feels good about where they are. They're only going to add something if they feel like, for sure, it's not going to kick us sideways, and it's something that we desperately need.
And TJ Husmanzada. Time now for the most fearless discussion of the day. All right, let's move to the NFL, where Fox Bet has the Detroit Lions and the Miami Dolphins as the top two teams to draft Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa in April. Longtime draft guru Mel Kiper Jr. also predicts the Lions will take Tua at number three. I find this fascinating considering the Lions have a franchise quarterback in Matt Stafford. No way, if I'm the Lions, am I ready to give up on Stafford, especially after watching Patrick Mahomes lead the Chiefs to the Super Bowl. In terms of arm talent, Stafford is the second best to Mahomes. If I'm the Lions, I'm doing everything in my power to provide Stafford the same kind of speedy weapons that have allowed Mahomes to become the best quarterback in football. If the Lions are dumb enough to move on from Stafford and possibly trade him, I know one team that should go all in to get Stafford, the Dallas Cowboys. Stafford grew up in Dallas and played high school football there. He's just 32 years old. He's an upgrade over Dak Prescott. Through 11 seasons, Stafford has already earned $210 million. I bring that up because Dallas could pay Stafford less money over the next 3 to 5 years than what it will cost to retain Prescott. This is a no-brainer. The Cowboys would be better off acquiring Stafford than overpaying for Dak. All right, Marcellus. Would the Cowboys be better off acquiring Stafford than overpaying Dak?
No, not at all. No. Appreciate y'all. Big Blue up in here. I'm going to get good with these Cowboy fans again, despite
Big Blue,
my poor
Big
performance
Blue is
as the
New
Cowboy.
York Giants.
Can we start here? 32 years old and Matthew Stafford and 26 years young and Dak Prescott. Go Dak. Can we talk about last year Matthew Stafford didn't finish the season and Dak has never missed a game in NFL? Go Dak. Can we talk about Dak having a career year despite the changes at offensive coordinator and looking forward to now working with the quarterback whisperer in Mike McCarthy? Go Dak. And now I will admit this. In the NFL right now, including Patrick Mahomes, no one has the missile launcher that Matthew Stafford has. That said, his lack of winning, and Dak being the second most winningest quarterback since he's been in the league, gives all advantages to Dak despite there being a talent gap slightly to Matthew Stafford.
Oh, the talent gap isn't slight. It is large. It's large. I haven't seen them both on the field the last two summers.
Yeah.
It's large. Now, if I'm the Cowboys and I can get Matthew Stafford, oh, I go get him. He's that good. He's been that guy since he came out of high school.
Yeah, that's real.
Been that guy coming out of Georgia college. And in the next 3 years, he's only owed $51 million. You're going to get that to Dak.
There you go.
In a year and a half. The only problem is, what will the Cowboys have to give up to get him? That would be the only problem. As far as talent, it's a no. Matthew Stafford is one of the top two or three talented quarterbacks, and not just arm, talent, period.
Yeah, I'm staying consistent with you, T. I look at it from the financials of it. You are getting a player, even if you want to compare the two and say, okay, in skill, if you don't want to make them this far apart, this guy is comparable to that guy, you're still getting back to the numbers of it, right? The whole reason why we're having this discussion is because of the number that Dak and his team is looking for. So if you can make it make sense, even with trade bait, right? Even if you got to get rid of someone, if you got to pay 20, 29, 30, 31 versus
his salary is $8 million next year. $8 million.
So that's
the salary.
You're almost playing with house. I'm like, man, if I can get Matthew Stafford, who can some people think he's better than Dak in an upgrade, and I can get him for that price, I can build my team, I can make a trade, and we're right where we need to be. So it's sensible from that perspective, but I don't think it's sensible if it's not based upon the salary.
Matt Stafford playing with an Ezekiel Elliott, an Amari Cooper, maybe another wide receiver, maybe a tight end. He's never had the right pieces around him, in my view, in the –
Vin Johnson.
Megatron.
Never had a running back.
Megatron.
I had one piece.
Okay.
Dallas has a team, an offensive line, a running back.
Yeah,
to me, never had a great play caller, offensive coach to work with. I think you put Matt Stafford in a better situation. If Matt Stafford was with Andy Reid at some point in his career, it would be a wrap. We would be talking about Matt Stafford as a great quarterback. And again, this really comes down to, if Dak were reasonable about what he wanted to get paid, I would never make this argument.
I'm going to tell you what,
but
this...
paying Dak $35 million, hell, you might be better off with Phillip Rivers.
I'm going to tell you what makes this go doesn't go, right? With any of these, we could say Matthew Stafford, we could say Teddy Bridgewater. What makes this go is the relationship aspect of this. What is Dak Prescott's respect factor? What's his level? What's his rating in that Dallas Cowboys locker room? What would that be in comparison to bringing in a Matthew Stafford? Would he be able to come in and settle into that environment and it not be a divisive deal, something that tears them
apart?
He's been
the guy for too long for that to be divisive. He's been the guy since he's come into the league. That won't be the Lions would be crazy, number one, to trade him, because that means you drafting a rookie, coach and GM going to be fired anyway. They not going to do it.
TJ, we got to stop being two-dimensional up here. We all went through the process, combines, being on the field. Let's stop having a talent-based conversation, because that's just the potential of your ability. You know, the potential. What's the kinetic ability? You actually taking that potential and making it happen. Matthew Stafford is a losing quarterback.
So is Dak.
By record. He's a losing record, right? And then you bring him into
in
a
Detroit
situation. But listen, the immeasurables, the intangibles, where Dak is off the charts in those things you can't measure. Where is Matthew Stafford? Realistically.
No, I agree with you.
He played hurt a lot of his
career. He played
career.
In 139
How about don't
straight
get
games.
Hurt? How about don't get
139
hurt?
139 straight games. Let's see Dak after 11 seasons.
Now, when you play in Detroit, and you play in Dallas, two different organizations.
Oh, I get you.
Functional and dysfunctional. Yes. That plays a part.
Yes. Which one's functional?
The Cowboys were dysfunctional. They're more functional.
How about the Saints?
They're not as dysfunctional. Yeah, I agree with that.
I just got to respect the immeasurables. Too many times we get caught up in big, fast, strong, and we lose the fact that maybe there's something up here we haven't measured in Dak that needs to be respected, and I'm giving them credit.
He went 8-8 last year. Those immeasurable deals.
In the worst division in football, they just make the playoffs. Worst division.
Team MVP, so that's on them. That's
worst division.
That's on his teammate.
TJ Husmanzada, Lamar Arrington are back. Let's move to Seattle, which is what Greg Olsen is doing with the veteran tight end joining the Seahawks on a one-year, $7 million deal. Russell Wilson posted a picture of himself with Olsen on Twitter, and it shouldn't be a surprise he's happy about landing the new weapon, given the fact that Wilson said during Super Bowl week that he wants Seattle to open up the offense like the Chiefs. Is signing Greg Olsen a sign the Seahawks will open up their offense?
You mentioned the Chiefs and then signing Greg Olsen when he turned 35 next month. And Greg Olsen, who I respect, has a great career, maybe Hall of Famer.
He old.
But, boy, he old.
He old.
He on that Jason Witten lactic acid plan.
He like, on that Marcellus going to Dallas plan.
He on that Marcellus in Dallas plan. Like, boy, when it's over, it's over. It's but, over. Look, injury concerns beyond the fact that he can't open up an offense at this stage of his career. A few years ago, this is opening up an offense. Right now, it's just open-ish. It's not even doing it for real. This is not going to work.
They not going to open it up because Pete Carroll's the head coach. He's a defensive guy. He wants to run the ball, play action, play defense. So with Pete Carroll being a head coach, it doesn't matter who they sign, who they bring in. He's going to do what he does best. That's run the ball, play defense, and if we can't do it, Russell, please win us the game.
They did it with Jimmy Graham. I mean, did they open it up then or did they stick to the plan? You know what I mean? So I think they're very comparable. Same college, same style of play, basketball, tall. I'm with Marcellus on this. I think he's way too old. And with all due respect.
$7 million.
I think he's way too old to have the type of impact where you say, we've added Greg Olsen.
401k.
Did y'all see the highlight that wasn't a highlight? Just
he tried to jump over
him. Oops.
$7 million.
No, it's too long.
Last year in Carolina, I think he was only on the field for 35% of their running plays.
Okay.
So he's definitely a guy that favors that they play in passing situations. He's not going to Seattle to block. They're paying him $7 million.
Play action, keep him in the box in terms of his pass receptions.
If they do make him block, they're running away from him. Backside cutoff.
Yeah, exactly. 190 receptions 3 years ago, 290 last, I mean 2 years ago, 590 last year. At least last year he played 14 games. The point is, the production's not even there to support that he's a threat. And then I think they're going to rely more on his wisdom, his acumen, knowing the game, knowing which voids in coverage to exploit. But down the field.
He may not make final roster.
$7 million.
He got too much guarantee.
He may not make the final roster.
Russell Wilson ain't putting out a picture if they ain't making the roster. Tell me this, though.
AB did. AB and Tom Brady did. Where he go? Where he end up? How'd that work out?
Honest to goodness, Russell Wilson putting out his picture. He seems kind of happy about it.
You got a point.
Should Russell Wilson be happy about this signing?
I don't think it's a significant enough signing to be happy about it. I mean, unless you're friends.
Somebody give you $7 million for 1 year's worth of work and you're going to call it insignificant?
Greg Olsen is happy.
Greg is happy, but if I'm Russell Wilson, I mean.
Greg had other suitors, so there was a marketplace for him. You landed him, and he has a name. Like, he comes in with a name, face value, recognition, respect. But in terms of throwing the football down the field, with their offense and their limitations and style of play, I don't see how he exploits.
They're going to have to clean up that offensive line before they do anything. It's not Greg Olsen is going to be a plus in the locker room on the field, minimal effect.
DK Metcalf's the guy for them.
Listen, y'all are making him sound like Jason Witten last year returning to the Cowboys.
I told you, lactic acid.
And I think there's more tread on the tires than that. And I know he's had some injuries recently, but Jason Witten was in the broadcast
booth. At least
Witten redshirted and was fresh. That was fresh slow.
He came
this
in
is
ready.
Gonna be, this is going to be stale slow. Like, it's different, man. Nah, he ain't ready, man.
Uncle
So Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred. But
you!
No!
You!
No!
Tell him!
But first, who's your big dummy of the day? And it better not be me, or I'm not taking you to the buffet.
Well, it's show you! How the hell you gonna put me up here and make me ask Tyson Fury that crazy ass question?
That's real. Yeah, I don't know if anybody can be crazier than Tyson Fury.
All man. Right, then.
Next that level. Was incredible. All right, let's talk Rob Manfred, whose response to the Astros sign-stealing scandal has had a lot of people up in arms in and outside of the game of baseball. LeBron James had something to say about it, taking the commissioner to task for his lack of action. Marcellus.
Yes, sir.
You like LeBron weighing in on this?
You know, I mean, it's his own page. It's not private, but it is still his page. He can say what he wants to say. It was on brand for LeBron. Sometimes I do step back from people who stay on brand all the time and wonder how authentic it really is. But respect for LeBron, the fan in LeBron, to come out and say that. So no problems with it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it either. A lot of people anticipated, like, I'm going to be upset. But yeah. LeBron can be a fan.
Yeah, exactly.
And be upset, and it's a conversation everyone's talking about. He wants to chime in.
Yeah.
I got no problem with it. All right, Uncle Jimmy, you have any thoughts on Rob Manfred and the Astros cheating scandal?
Yes, I do.
Oh, well, go ahead.
First of all, let me tell you something. You need to get out your feelings.
I need to get out my feelings.
You need to get out your feelings. You taking this thing way too personal.
How?
You coming at this thing from an emotional standpoint.
Your heart.
See, I know your history. See, I know for a fact you the one that's always getting cheated upon. So, in other words, you the Dodgers and not the Astros. Now, don't lie. Okay?
Yeah.
I told you yesterday, tell the truth and shame the devil.
You did.
Tell these people about the time you came home and heard somebody banging on a trash can in your bedroom upstairs. Trust me, bro. Who was ever up there in your bedroom, they stole more than your signs. So look, I get why you want to throw the book at them, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, I know this whole scandaling thing getting a little too close for you.
Yeah.
See, well, let me tell you something. This is a classic example of don't hate the player, hate the what?
The game.
Hate the game.
Mm. All right, so don't hate Rob Manfred. Don't hate the Players Union.
Look here, man, I'm telling you about Rob Manfred.
Yeah, what?
Look here, man, let me tell you, Uncle Jimmy, I've been through more than my share of cheating scandals, if you understand what I'm saying. So I understand what the Astros is going through. They in the doghouse.
Yeah.
Sleeping on the couch. You walk in the house, you got people throwing stuff at you. Hey, man, it's a real dark time right now.
But yeah.
But what they're going to have to do is what any man got to do. And we all been there.
Uh-oh.
When the jig is up, you facing some serious time. You got to throw yourself on the mercy of the court. Sit down with your woman. Look at her straight. Look, have a heart to heart with her. Tell her, say, baby. Baby, you look at her dead square in the eye like this.
Now,
and then you lie. You say, baby, I ain't gonna never do it again. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. I don't know. I didn't have to cheat. I didn't need to. But let me tell you this, though. Trust and believe. I can guarantee you, I bet you ain't gonna get this ring back.
All right,
I'm tell you what, that ain't happening.
Let me get to my approval rating for Rob Manfred.
Till this day, you ain't getting that ring back.
I gotta give my approval rating for Rob Manfred. We're running out of time. I got him at a 61, role player, 12 in job performance, 13 all-time greatest, 20 characters, 16 authenticity. 61 role player.
I got him a little lower than you, but same category role player. Man, you gotta give up the titles, brother. Give up, vacate the titles. That's the only way to fix this.
That ain't happening.
Yep. Get the ring back.
Look, the internet disagrees with us.
They have better ring back.
Fire. We're a little bit easier on him than they are.
Yes.
All right, that's it for us.
Exclusive
tomorrow, club. Deontay Wilder.
Oh,
possible.
World champion.